today we're going to have a discussion, talk a little bit about this right speech. And so I thought I would give a little bit of a summary of what we talked about last time. And then last week, and then, you know, add a little bit more. And then we'll take a break. And when we come back, those of you who want to be in some small groups, you can come back. Those of you on Zoom can come back. Or, you know, you can go offline and then come back during the question and answer if you want to. All right. Jude, good to see you. So, do I need to introduce myself? Does everyone know who I am? Okay, good. So, this idea of, yeah. There's one new person? Who's that? Oh.
You don't know who you are.
Oh, you don't know. That's okay. That's okay. Just to tell you my name. There might be somebody new online too. So yeah, I'm Tuere Silla, and I'm just one of the guiding teachers here. And so I've kind of thought that I didn't need to because Adam started everything, but that's fine. I'm glad you're here. And then, we usually do a sit and then have a talk and then some open it up for comments and questions. But tonight we're going to also do a little bit of a discussion about it. So, so right speech, which is where we are. It's, we're right in this ethical conduct. And I have to stress this as much as I can. This right speech comes after you have spent some time noticing your views and noticing your intentions. So you begin to sense that something is amiss. That's usually how I think of it. The first training is to watch your view and watch your intentions. What's the motivation behind what you're doing? And what's your view that you're holding your actions and your behaviors in? And then you get into the actual actions, which start with speech, and then it moves into conduct and livelihood. So livelihood would be, for those of us that are retired, it would be, what do you do all day? What do you do with your time? And so whether you're working or not, it's still, what do you do with your time? What do you invest your money in, invest your energy in? That's what I think of as livelihood. And so, and then after you begin to see this, what's strange is in the Eightfold Path, mindfulness, effort, and concentration comes at the end of the trainings. It's not the end of the training because the samadhi or the concentration part is going to lead to seeing more dukkha, more difficulties, more problems, and it's going to keep bringing you back to the practice, and eventually you begin this cycle, not linear like this, I'm going along getting better, but this cycle in the present moment of getting more and more and more clear about who you are and how you want to live your life. And so the first of these conducts is speech and beginning to look at your speech. So last week, I talked about speech from the framing of how we talk to ourselves, because I realized that the way I talked to myself was more, I guess I could say, was meaner, harsher, more habitual than the way I would talk to other people. And I could be very, very passive and controlled in my talking to other people. But to myself, yeah, it was just no holds bar. And so I started working on right speech by looking at how I talk to myself. And I didn't have to get all, I mean, I tried all these different speech kind of, you know, like nonviolent communication and all these speech things, but every time I tried to talk to my family, they thought I was trying to do therapy on them. It never worked. I don't know who talks like that, but I never could. And so I started having to do things that would help me see right speech in my own understanding. This is what I want to encourage you about. If you think of this learning right speech as a way that you have to learn how to talk, it doesn't work, because you'll try to talk that way, but it's so foreign from the way that we talk to ourselves that it just comes off clunky, and it doesn't come off like it's like you mean it. Sounds disingenuous, like you're trying to make somebody like you. So a better way, I think, to approach this is to begin to start where you talk to you and begin to see how the speech is in the way you talk to yourself, the way that we go about connecting with ourselves. There are five ways that the Buddha said you should evaluate your speech. And the first thing is it timely? Right? So you just watch. Is it timely? Now, I can give you some ideas of what timely speech would be. Is this the right time to say this to yourself? For instance, if you're sitting in meditation, do you really need to talk about that bill yet again? Do you really need to go over that argument again? You can think of that thinking as talking to yourself. So is this timely? Is this the time we need to rehash this? Is it truthful? It's sort of like beginning to question what's truthfulness. And is it truthful? And is it beneficial? Is it helping you to talk this way right now? This is what I'd ask myself. Is this the way I want to talk to myself right now? And then there's two more. So there is it timely? Is it truthful? And is it beneficial? That seems pretty easy to kind of like remember those. And the other two is looking at the quality of your mind that's doing the talking. Is there a level of affection? And is there a level of kindness, goodwill, right? So those are the five. What I had to learn, and this is the part about practice that it's hard for us in the West, I think, to get. But these are not edicts and they are not nouns. So nobody can tell you if something is timely. And nobody can tell you if something is beneficial. You have to feel that for yourself. You can tell. You can begin to sense. There have been times when I have heard myself talking about my conduct or something that I did. And it's very painful hearing it. But it's very beneficial. It's timely, it's truthful, and it's beneficial. And there's actually, if my mind is kind of averse to it, I actually just soften and listen to this. Be kind and just listen to what's happened. Just listen to what I need to say to myself. Because sometimes ourselves can say things that are harsh, truer than anyone else. We wouldn't even listen to anyone else from it. So, is it beneficial? Is it timely? Is it truthful? It might be harsh what is being said, but if you soften and begin to just notice how it's happening, then you can begin to see this is beneficial and I can be affectionate with myself, soften a little bit here because I'm trying to understand the Dhamma. I'm trying to understand how harmful my behavior can be. So these five areas you want to learn to figure out for yourself whether what it means. What does it mean to be beneficial? I don't know. I can tell you what I think it means. But really, you have to learn to see. And part of the way you learn to see, which is the edge in Dhamma, is you have to be willing to see when you are not beneficial. So you can't make this distinction that says, only when am I beneficial am I practicing right speech. And I would hear a lot of yogis, a lot of students would say to me, I'm working on right speech, trying to not do this, not do this, not do this. I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. And this is the way I'm going to talk. And I'm like, oh, yeah, good with that. You must don't plan on getting mad. Because if you get mad, everything falls apart. We're in a whole different realm here. So the truth of practice, this eightfold path, is not to tell you what's the right way to talk, what's the best way to be. It is to help you come to understand why speaking to yourself in a timely way, in a truthful way, in a beneficial way, with a kind, affectionate attitude, why that's less suffering than the way you commonly talk to yourself, right? That's what you're trying to see. And the only way you can see that is you have to be willing to see when you're not timely, when you're not beneficial. You have to sort of see. I had to learn to see that I was sitting there in meditation grumbling about all the things I didn't like about stuff. That's all I would do, is just sit and grumble about stuff. And it seemed like as soon as I sat down, I had a good 45 minutes to get it all out. And so I never questioned that, because it gave me something to do when I was sitting there. But after a bit, I begin to see that especially when you go on retreat, you think you can just sit down and let me grumble everything out and it'll be gone. But then I come back to the next sit, do my walking, come back, grumble again. Do my walking, come back, grumble again. And it just never seemed to end. It's like whatever I grumbled about, it would scratch that during the walking and say, I don't think any of that's going to work. So then when I come back, I'm starting all over again. Got a whole new 45 minutes. No teacher could have convinced me that this is suffering. No teacher can convince you that sitting there thinking is suffering. No one can do that. And no one can make you stop that sitting there thinking, because that's what we do. What's going to make you begin to stop spending your meditation time just sitting there rehashing things is you have to think, this is not timely. This is not beneficial. I don't even have that much time to meditate, and I'm not going to spend it sitting here thinking. So you have to feel into that for yourself. Then it becomes right speech. I think I shared this here, but I can't remember. When you go on retreat, they always say, we're holding the retreat in noble silence. And you know, it means don't talk. But there is a real noble silence. And my teacher, Venerable Panawati, used to come here all the time. She taught a retreat. And she said, you can talk if you want to. Can't do what she called animal talking. So you can't sit and make fun of people and talk about people and things like that and grumble about that. But you could talk about the Dhamma as long as you wanted to. You and someone else, you two want to talk about the morning instructions, what you learned, what you're feeling, whatever. Talk, 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 talk. She didn't care. Cloud Mountain had a fit about this. They actually didn't let her come back. She's like, I don't care. Talk as much as you want. That's not noble silence, because there's a rule that says don't talk. She said, but I got a feeling that you're going to stop talking. And she was right. She dropped that room down into such a stillness that you didn't want to talk anymore. You could have if you wanted to, but you didn't want to. That's this noble silence. When you, not the edicts and the rules that we put ourselves to make ourselves be a certain way, but right speech is the beginning of learning how to move with speech in a way that doesn't cause you harm, that doesn't cause another person harm, and doesn't cause the both of you harm. How do you do that? You gotta actually practice with it. See, you gotta have good speech, bad speech. You gotta have, hold them both the same. And then in this speech, you have to be willing to notice how you're talking to other people. Same five qualities. Is it timely, what you're saying? Is it truthful? Is it beneficial? Pretty basic. And then what's your attitude as you talk to them? Do you have an attitude that's affectionate, out of care for them? Or are you really just, you know, giving them the once over? And are you kind? But then there's a third way, and that's how we listen. How we listen to speech, because speech is both the hearing, it's the speaking, and it's the thinking. All of that is all part of our speech. And you want to consider how you're listening to people. Probably one of the greatest lessons I learned in this trying to figure out a way to stop arguing with my sister so much was learning to notice how I was listening to her. I thought she was arrogant. I thought she was, you know, rude to people. She was insensitive, and she was very defiant and mean. She's my older sister, so, you know, anybody that's got an older, you know how they are. Kind of run everything. It's all about them. And I had this really negative view of her. But my sister was extremely smart, extremely high level, like genius level thinking. And so her vocabulary was way outside the mark of the average person. So the words that she commonly used, you know, sounded pretty snooty to the rest of us commoners. And she couldn't get jokes because she didn't understand the punchline, and you had to explain the joke to her. And if she tried to tell a joke, it didn't really make any sense, because unless you kind of know the scientific term of that, you wouldn't really get it. So there's this disconnect in the awkwardness that she had in relating to people. And I remember one day she said something that sounded so dismissive and arrogant, you know, her usual self. But instead of me just lashing back at her, I don't know how it is that as you begin to practice with speech, you just begin to shift the way that you be with it. So instead of me lashing out at her my normal way because she's so arrogant, I asked her, did you mean for that to sound so dismissive? And she's like, no. Is that dismissive? No. This word means blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yeah, but that really came across pretty dismissive. She says, no, I didn't mean it like that. Let me think here. Hold on a minute. And then she gave me the same sentence with a different word that didn't sound dismissive at all. Dismissive at all. And so I begin to learn, not because someone told me what to do, but because I begin to practice with both the truth of wrong speech and right speech, speech that is beneficial and speech that isn't beneficial, speech that is timely, speech that does not feel timely, speech that isn't too kind and speech that is kind, you begin to see and understand for yourself what right speech is. And then you can begin to understand that a lot of this has to do with your meditative practice, your willingness to be still and notice the way you're talking to yourself. Notice that. It goes a long ways in helping you understand speech. So that when you begin to listen to other people and you begin to listen to what you're listening to on television or in your, you know, social media feeds and you start listening, you start realizing where all the speech is coming from. And it's a much bigger thread than just whether or not you say the right things to the right people. I remember our teacher, Rodney Smith, one time said he came up with this way he was going to work on right speech. He said he was not going to lie. So every time he told a lie, he was going to write a little tick in a book. And he was a therapist. And so every time he'd say a lie, some random lie, pull out his little black book, tick, put it in there, no problem. And then he had this client. I was sitting there with him. He said something. It's not a lie. Habit, pulled out his black book. And then the client said, "What was that?" He goes, "Oh, it's nothing. Just something I thought." That's a lie, right? He's like, the client is like getting all frustrated. What are you doing? Why are you writing things? What is that? What are you making that mark for? Did I do something wrong? What's going on here? And Rodney was in this, stuck in this place. Because if he told the truth, he would be telling his client, "I keep ticking because I keep lying to you." He can't say that. He said, that's it. He said, he put one more tick in the book. Said he's going to lie, told a client. It just has to do with this habit he has of thinking certain thoughts. And every time he hears that thought in his head, he puts a tick there to remind himself to stop. And he goes, it didn't have anything to do with the client. But he knew it was a lie. It was about lying. And so he threw the book away. Stop using it. Right? Throw the book away. You don't need a book to judge your behavior. You just need to be willing to notice when you're speaking one of these five categories, right? You can just pick one. Say, let's just notice how much, whether my speech is seems beneficial. What I say to myself, what I say to other people. Do I listen with a mind that's beneficial? Pick one, work on it for 3 months. It won't matter. It will impact the other four. So the other four will begin to come to you because you're working on one. So just work on one. Or you could pick a certain period of time and say, okay, from this hour to this hour, I'm going to start watching the way I talk to myself, the way I talk to other people, the way I listen. I'm just going to watch and see what happens. Good or bad. What you think is good speech, bad speech, it's all practice. It's all good. You're learning either way. Or you could say, whenever I talk to my friend, that's when I'm going to watch my speech. Rest of the time, you don't even care about it. But just during this time. Because once you start putting this speech in the framing of practice, now you're going to start actually beginning to open up and see. So we're going to take a break here, but this is what I want us to talk a little bit about. I don't want you to expose your deep secrets about, I do a lot of exposing, and you don't have to do that. I want you to talk not how bad your speech is or whether it's bad or not. I want you to begin to take the break to consider, where is an area that you think you could, just one little sliver out of a life, a day of talking, where's one little sliver that you could look at your speech? So is there a certain kind of, one of the five qualities you'd like to look at? And maybe it's a certain, you know, whenever I talk to my mom, I want to have this, I want to begin to think about this. Or, you know, when I'm in traffic, I cuss at everybody, so maybe I need to look at it then, you know. Just think about where, what little sliver of speech do you want to look at? That's the first round. And then the second round, we're going to go one step deeper. Sorry, everybody. There's a little bit of a snafu here. I thought we could just add more time if we needed to, but we could not. So I hope everybody had a chance to at least think about this first and second question. And then let's see if anybody would like to share anything, any comments from it, or ask any questions. Okay, question down here.
Thanks. Could you, Tori, talk a little bit about the distinction between kindness and affection?
Affectionately versus kindly? Mm-hmm. So, affectionately, think of it as having a bit of care, right? So, even if you have, like I'll talk about my mother, right? When she was getting, right before she died, she was having a little bit of dementia. So she would tell the same story, I'd say a good 50 times, same thing. But she would say it every time, like this is the first time she's telling you. And there, I would have this level of affection, a care, because I knew she didn't realize she had told me that thing. She would say, "Have I told you this before?" And I say, "No, I don't think so." there's a level of affection. Kindness, and this is something you have to really feel into, because affection and kindness are different. And I'm giving you my felt-in kind of way. But affection or kindness is more of how I related to her. So I could hold her affectionately, and how I actually related to her, or what the Buddha said was more of a mind in goodwill. So is your mind, I could see how my mind could be like, "No, mama, it's okay. It's okay. You know, you say whatever you want." But on the inside, my mind is like, "God, how long am I going to have to deal with this?" You know, there's not an attitude of goodwill around this. I'm being nice, but I'm actually really frustrated about hearing this over and over and over. And I'm worrying about, how am I going to be with her if she starts getting more difficult, more demented? And so even though I can be affectionate with her, my mind is not in goodwill. It has a lot of resistance and aversion. So it's really more, how is your mind being kind in that situation? You see the difference? And I'm giving you my take on it. But if you hold that affection and kindness are not the same thing, then what that gray area is going to look like, you're going to begin to feel it when you start noticing how you speak to people. Because, you know, we can all kind of do that passive-aggressive kind of, "I hope everything's okay. I mean, I hope you're not really upset, but really we're like digging a little knife in there because it's not a lot of kindness in the mind. So that's what you want to begin to notice. Yeah. Anybody else? Oh, I see the hand. Andrea?
I was curious to know what the second question was.
Oh, the second question was how...
We didn't get it.
You guys didn't do it at all? Oh, nobody online did the second question?
No, you didn't post it.
I gave them both at the same time to you guys. But I thought Malia would just give you the second question in 10 minutes.
I thought I had.
It's okay.
It's okay.
You're off the hook. So the second question to feel into is how would you or who would you be if you actually practiced with the thing that you were talking about on the first half? Like, what is it that you want to practice with? And then we talk about what we want to practice with. But then it's thinking about to yourself, who would I be if I did actually practice with this? If I did actually only speak things that I felt were beneficial? Or if I did begin to watch my speech around my sister, who would I be in that case? And that gets more into you feeling into the actual practice and not just this heady way that we talk about what we want to do. So, you know, any one of you online can think for a minute and see who would you be? Maybe share that with us, who you think you'd be if you actually practiced with this. But even if you didn't think about that, did you have enough time to at least talk about what you want to practice with around this right speech? You know, can you see how if you practiced with it on any level, good or bad, what we think of as good or bad, any level, however you're speaking, is all okay? This is the hard part of Dhamma that I have to remind people all the time. That there's no right way to do it and wrong way to do it. When the Buddha gave the four foundations, and he gave the foundation for mind, he said, not, oh, this is a good mind, this is a bad mind. He said, knowing if the mind is affected by wanting. So you want to know the presence and absence of hindrances. So it doesn't matter whether there's a aversion present or it's not present. Do you know that aversion's present and it's not present? This is not so much is the mind affected by aversion or it's not affected. Do you know that? And that's what this is the problem, that in the West we tend to tilt to one side. We only want to see ourselves when we're doing what's in keeping with the Dhamma and I'm in line with the Dhamma and everything is great. And we have this little blinder on so we don't see nothing to see over here. Like it's like the Wizard of Oz, you know, behind the curtain. Don't even look at all that. That's, you know, that's like hiding all our trash and stuff. But in Dhamma, because of non-self, because the Buddha was clear that this is human conditioning and not you, then you can freely look at that which is harmful and that which is not. And you can begin to learn just as much from your harmful conduct as you learn from your non-harming conduct. You can see, and the more your mind sees and looks at that harming conduct, the more it will choose non-harming as a way of being. But if we never look at this, if we close the curtain, then we have to pretend over on this side that we're always doing good. We're doing good. We're doing good. Everything's okay. Nothing to see. And we can't really genuinely step into the practice. So it's all about being willing to see this, what we would consider not so good. Do you see what I'm pointing to? It is both liberating and difficult. Because the liberation comes when you truly get that it's not you making your mind think this stuff. It's just the mind thinking it. When you truly get that, then you don't have all the judgment around what you're thinking, and then you're just applying right effort, which is if you notice some unskillfulness has arisen, you try to abandon it. You try to renounce it, let it go. Try to do what it takes to keep it from arising in the future. It will, because it's habit. But you're trying to see, oh, I see that. Oh, this doesn't work. My son and I have been in this back and forth arguing that's stupid. You guys think I'm all nice and easy, sweet and kind. He would beg to differ. So whenever I get really mad, I will yell at him, swear at him. And I said to him one day, okay, I need an off button, because if I feel myself getting really, really angry, I got to be able to walk away and not say the things that I want to say. Because if I stay in the conversation with you, yeah, it's going to take a while for me to calm down to the I'm sorry place. So we have to be okay with just hanging up. That's it. I'm hanging up. That's my off switch. It's not like I am going to tell him I'm Buddhist. I'm a Dhamma teacher. I'm never going to be cussing you out. That is a lie. That is not true. So I have to know, though, if I start feeling that rage, that rage causes harm. So I need an exit strategy, not a I'm never going to cuss you out strategy. I need an exit strategy when I begin to feel it. And so we gave each other permission. Hang up the phone. He can hang it up. I can hang it up. It's not this, oh, he hung up the phone on me. No, that's his exit strategy. That's how we keep from harming each other. Brings all this quiet in. It's amazing what happens when you're arguing with someone and they hang up the phone. It's all quiet. And you can just settle down. Best decision ever. But just think about that. Usually the last thing you want someone to do when you're arguing with them on the phone is to hang it up. So then you're like stuck in this locked in, glued, arguing back and forth. Nobody can get off the phone. And we just came up with this strategy. Hang up. That's it. Either one of us. Saves a lot of I'm sorry's. So this is an exit strategy. And because I know it's human conditioning, it's not personal. The hanging up the phone is almost a gift. So he doesn't hurt me and I don't hurt him. Can you see that? Very different though. That's because you're not taking it personal and you're not holding it like he's being disrespectful to his mama. That's who I would have been like, oh no. Oh no. I'm not going to have that. But now I have this understanding that we both need an exit strategy so that we do not harm each other. And that is a much wiser way to be. But that took some learning into feeling into just getting angry. And it's how, you know, what it does to us. So this is what we're practicing with this month. We're looking at right speech. But looking at right speech means that you're willing to look at your speech regardless of what you're saying. You're willing to look at all those little white lies, little black lies, you know. You're willing to look at all that and not treat yourself like there's something wrong because it happens. That's really all this is. All right. Well, yeah, Adam, since you got the mic.
So thank you for the talk. Really excellent. Had quite a few little aha moments, including partially from our group chat. So we talked about, you talked about like listening to that internal voice as like a gateway into right speech and learning. And we talked in our group about compassionate listening. And it seemed like in my practice, I've seen this connection. I didn't really understand what was going on between like in a heated discussion, noticing my internal talk of either, you know, defensive collapse or defensive, you know, aggression, and how that gets in the way of listening. And then if I can address that or see it and not run towards it, then I can listen. And then from that position of listening, I can actually respond in a way that causes significantly less harm, that sees the person, the suffering, or the, you know, the hurt. And then the speech almost feels like it happens miraculously on its own, where it's like, oh, I understand what the person is saying because I'm not tied up in my own dialogue of what's going on. And then right. The response comes more naturally. So that's been a huge gift. I have a question about, a lot of our talk has been about those kind of difficult conversations. What about speech just in connection with mm-hmm. people? You know, as a lay practitioner, I spend so much of my time talking with people, connecting with people. I don't, you know, I'm not engaging in idle chatter. Right. But a lot of the times I notice, like, if there's a momentum in conversation, sometimes harmful speech happens and I'm like mid-sentence, I'm like, wow, I am just trashing somebody, or I am, you know, spinning up about what's wrong in the world to the benefit of nobody in the room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how do you work more in that capacity where it's not in conflict, but mm-hmm. where you're trying to connect and then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, what have I been doing right mm-hmm. here?
So the Buddha said that you have to look at speech, conduct, and thoughts as mirrors. It's a mirror, right? So if you notice that you're like trashing someone, right? The minute you notice it, our first thought is, oh, don't say that. Stop. Okay, I'm not gonna talk like that anymore. So we don't see the bad. But what you really need to do is notice what you're saying, keep on saying it, and then when you sit down and practice by yourself quietly, re-feel that, relive that moment. Because to your practice, in your practice, your mind can't distinguish between the past, the present, and the future. So if you recall that moment when you were doing all that trash talking, and you just kind of sit there, and you're remembering the moment, but you're feeling it in the body. You're feeling what you're feeling. You need to learn to feel the pain of that. Not the idea that I shouldn't be doing this, but feel the pain of it. The more you feel the First Noble Truth, the suffering of it, the more you will see that you're the one doing that suffering, and the more you will let go of it. And then the steadier you're going to get in all your conduct. But if this becomes a kind of a, like when you were talking at first about this defensive retreating and defensive aggression, if you don't feel what you're feeling when you're retreating or when you're being aggressive, you won't know what's driving that energy. And it will keep happening, and you'll just try to control it. And sometimes you will, and sometimes you won't. So you want to feel what it feels like when you are retreating. What is that? What am I feeling here? What's going on? And feel what's happening. You can feel the pain of someone else as you're retreating. You can feel the pain of them when you're aggressive towards them. You can feel that. And gradually, if you hold them both, not just all the times that you actually can be open and you're good and you're settled, you feel a little bit of defensiveness, but you're like, I'm okay. I'm okay. And then you can hear and you're open. That is great. But you really got to be willing to feel when you're retreating and when you're aggressive. And you got to know that. And not from a shame place, because it won't help you. So it's the same way when you hear yourself trashing the government, the people, life, all those other people. When you hear yourself, that's what you want to feel into. What is the felt sense of this? And I always ask myself, what if someone was saying this about me? How would I feel? And thinking about them saying that about us feels terrible. But me saying that about them, that feels right. You have to get that. And so that learning to feel it is what's going to be the thing that helps you. So you're not trying to quickly understand right speech. You're trying to help yourself feel like being around your speech, looking into your speech, it's all okay. So don't think wrong speech, not right speech versus wrong speech. Think harmonious speech. When does it feel harmonious? When does it feel out of alignment? And if it feels out of alignment, what's wrong with this? Then you can begin to feel the suffering. And you'll find yourself catching it way before you say it. But you won't do that if you don't want to see. You know, you just wish you wouldn't talk like that. You see the difference? Yeah. That's what this is. It's all good. The fact that you notice that you speak that way and you hear it, that's the beauty of practice. That's what you want to see. And then you want to just gradually learn how to be with it. Yeah. Good. We'll have Steve, you'll be the last one because it's 9 o'clock. It's not 9 yet. You got 1 minute. So you can say what you want to say. I just can't give you an answer.
Okay. I'm a beginner and I don't know who you are.
You don't? I introduce myself.
I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
I think I know what you're going to say, but you just in passing mentioned shame.
Yeah.
And not in a way of shame. And to me, that's the hard part. It's not just in passing. Trying to see what effect I'm having on you may be hard for me.
Yep.
It is towards my daughter.
It is. It's hard for all of us. It is hard. It's shameful. It's embarrassing. And that's why I keep trying to bring the Dhamma into reality, which is both the things we don't like and the things we do like equal. Same thing. You learn both ways. But that shame is also speech. It is not speech in harmony with the Dhamma.
So that's getting at what I wanted to ask you. We have to learn what the words mean. There's a YouTube about a guy talking about sharks aren't fish. And he goes through this whole long thing about what a fish is. There's the what you think of when you think of a fish. And then there's what I think, which may be something different.
Yes, that's what I'm pointing to. So this is not something that you're going to get done in a month.
Yeah.
This... Dang it, you had it all planned out. What these monthly talks are for is to inspire you to begin to see how that shame is coming up. Because what you're going to find the more you start practicing with Dhamma is it is all the same thing. It doesn't matter if that dukkha or that suffering is coming from speech, or it's coming from, you know, aversion, or it's coming from some hindrance, or it's coming from, you know, the selfing, five aggregates. It doesn't matter what it's coming from. The unhooking is always going to be that you see you're doing it. It's not coming from anywhere else. It's coming from you. And it takes like layers and layers and years and months and practice to begin to see that you're doing this. You're doing this. You're doing this. You're doing this. And then when you begin to see that you're doing this, you stop. And so it's not, I don't want to bring up shame. I don't want to have shame. That shame is a habit that you're doing to yourself. So you have to be willing to feel that shame and ask yourself the same right speech questions, because it's coming from the thinking mind. What is this? Is it beneficial? Is this helping me? And you can begin to see how this conditioning that we live out of, that all of this is water that we're swimming in, and we're conditioned to be this way. That is the truth of Buddha's liberation. That's the thing that's hard to get, but it is the reason why the Buddha's Dhamma is liberating. Because out of all the wisdom in the world, he was the only one to say, non-self. It's not you, it's habit. And as long as that habit keeps running and that habit is still playing, you're going to keep doing it. It'll never stop. And then the only way you're going to interrupt it is you have to be willing to see it in reality and see it again and see it again. Say, oh, oh, there it is again. Oh, there it is again. And the more you see it, the more you begin to realize, I don't actually have to do this. I could do something different. That's what me and my son decided. We could just hang up. We don't have to just keep yelling at each other because nobody can hang up the phone. No, we could just hang up. And either one of us can just hang up. That's it. Quiet. It's amazing. Parents have to start giving their kids opportunity to hang up. Anyway, so that's what you're looking at. And so for those of you that feel that shame, you are going to have to feel it. It's hard in the beginning, but gradually it gets easier because it's not you. You can begin to see, this is a habit pattern that I just do and I don't have to. But you won't ever see that habit pattern conditioning until you take some time to just look at it. It's okay. You can give yourself a pass and say, to where he said, it's okay. Shame, bad side, good side, it's all the same. It's all the same. I just got to see it all.